let's get to the topic, because we have got a lot of chapters to cover. Let's look at 1 Samuel, and let's look immediately at the overview of the book. It gives you some idea of where we have been and where we are going in relationship to this. And I'm looking over here for this monitor. No, I got to look at the one on the right. Okay, and here's what we talked about last week. And last week was number 5, but it was 2 weeks ago and everything. So we talked about the sin of King Saul. We talked about how he became king and how the sin that he committed that caused God to, within 2 years of him becoming king, God deciding not to let King Saul remain as the king. And that is remarkable in and of itself, because the rest of the book is of the next 38 years of the life of King Saul. And that's what we're trying to cover. Is the life of King Saul. And so we talked about that last week, and we talked particularly about the two mistakes he made when he rebelled against God. And both mistakes he made was in worshiping God the wrong way. You've got to read 1 Samuel. You've got to read these events in the life of Saul. God said, "I'm sorry I made that man to be king." Why? He doesn't want to do what I want him to do. And the evidence was in worship. That shows us we don't have a whole lot of leeway in worship. That's what we tried to, and I would encourage you to sit down and read 1 Samuel. You'll be amazed at how many great lessons there are. And the lesson number 5 that is highlighted up there. Go ahead and put that next slide up. Is Samuel and David in his early life, and David confronts Goliath. We're going to skip that one. I'll be out of town this next week, and so whoever will be teaching the class next week will be talking about David and Goliath. Be an easy story to teach, but boys, there's some really, really great material in there. All right, let's get to where we are. You know about David killing Goliath, and so I'm assuming that you know about that. So you got King Saul, and he's an evil man as far as in so many ways. But he has an unbelievable problem, and that is his jealousy. Whenever David kills Goliath, he begins really to see David as the threat to his throne. And so when you get to chapter 17 and chapter 18, the statement is made that he kept his eye on David. I mean, he's a great warrior, and so he needs him in his army. He's a real young man, and I don't want to take any of the thunder from the lesson next week, but he is so talented that he becomes a great, great, great leader among the Jews. So what I want us to do tonight is to look at Saul's wrath and his many attempts to kill David. And so we've got a lot of chapters to go, and I've highlighted and written the chapters on the slides there. Chapter 18, look at that. And these are some of the points we'll look at in chapter 18, and we may not have time to look at all of these points. But immediately after David kills Goliath, there's a friendship between Jonathan and David. Now, who's Jonathan? Who's his daddy? All right, King Saul. King Saul's his daddy. Who's going to be the next king after King Saul? Oh, it's always David. David, it's David. And yet, we'll see tonight that David says to, or that Jonathan says to David, "I know you're going to be the next king." Why? Because the prophets had told King Saul, "You've lost your kingdom. Your son is not going to be the king, not be the next king." And yet he says, "When you are made to be king, I'm going to be your right-hand man." And so there is that friendship, that is spoken there. And in verse 1, that Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him more than he did his own soul. And you look a little bit later down there, verse 3, because he loved him as he did his own soul. And sometimes you get into a Bible discussion with people that are pro-homosexual, and they say, "See there, David was a homosexual." There's no indication of that. You know, isn't brotherly love a godly trait? Isn't that what this is? There's no indication this is, you know, this is homosexuality. He loved him. But if you want to read the Bible that way, I have a copy of a Bible that I got from a homosexual who died. I got some of his books and everything, and it's a homosexual Bible. Ready for it? You want to know what version it is? Any guesses? Queen James Version. And so you've got to look at that aspect of that, because they've taken every story in the Bible and there's almost vulgarity in that version of the Bible. Judy won't let me put that Bible anywhere in the house. She said, somebody will find it, and what on earth will they think about us? So I've got it hidden in a rather secure place. And so when I die, somebody's going to find the Queen James Version, and they'll say, why did my dad have this version of the Bible? Well, there's even a story behind how all of that came about. But Saul was jealous of David because David became such a great leader that the people rejoiced. And you begin reading that the women are dancing and rejoicing. And Saul was very angry because of what the song was. He loved verse 1 of the song. Saul has killed his thousands. Wow, isn't that a great song for a king? Isn't that great? What a great man he is. Second verse, David has killed his 10,000s. And what you're going to see as you look through all of this, you're going to see this jealousy as it is stirred up and as it is stirred up. Look down at verse 8. Saul was very angry, and the saying displeased him. They've ascribed to David 10,000 of me. They've described only thousands. Now, what more can he have other than to have the kingdom? That's what he's going to get. But Saul, in his mind, says, I'm not going to let him have it. I'm going to do everything I can. And we're about to read and see how often he tried to kill David. Look at verse 9. So Saul eyed David from that day forward. How would you express that in modern terminology? He eyed David. Yeah, this guy signed over here, and I don't know if he knows sign language. He did just like that. I'm keeping my eyes on you. And it is obvious that he did. And so Saul has a spirit that comes upon him. I strongly doubt this is demon possession, because the listening to soothing music would help in that situation. Demon possession is something far different from that. And so this is described that Saul had a distressing spirit from God, a melancholy feeling that is just turns bitter against those that are around you. I do not see this as being his demon possession, because it'd be the only time in the Bible you'd find out that demons like to hear harp music, or maybe they don't like to hear it. But isn't that what you sometimes do? Whenever you get depressed, don't you listen to music? I hope that you do. I'll tell you, if you're having a bad day, why don't you just start singing early in the day, count your many blessings, name them one by one. It'll surprise you what the Lord has done, will it not? And so you've got this situation that is developing here in relationship to this. And verse 11 says, David is playing his harp and played music in his hand, and Saul cast the spear, for he said, I will pin David to the wall. David escaped from his presence twice. And that may be twice in this incident, though there's another instance that's mentioned later, and this twice here may involve this one plus the other one, but it could have been as many as three times. And so here's David, and he's come, and he's made to be Saul's servant, and he's honored to be Saul's servant. But what does Saul do? Well, verse 12, he's afraid of David, because the Lord was with David, and the Lord had departed from Saul. Therefore, Saul removed him from his presence and made him captain over 1,000. And so everywhere David goes out, he behaves himself wisely. You see that in verse 14? You know, how would you like to be Saul? Can you imagine? Nothing is going right in his life. I mean, he's really, really happy whenever this shepherd boy says, I'll go out and fight Goliath. And when he offers him, and Saul offers him the armament that Saul was to wear, they wouldn't fit David. You know, Saul was head and shoulders above everybody else. And so David went out, and Saul could have gone out, if he was the tallest Jew there was, could have gone out, but he didn't. He was afraid of him. And now he's got another problem. That is, it's not a Goliath. He's afraid. If I say a little short Jew, I don't mean that disrespectful at all. But isn't that descriptive? How tall is David? Well, biblical times, they were not all that tall. I mean, you know, 5'6" would have been an average height for many of the Jews. And so, what was it? Rick Hall, is Rick here tonight? Rick, you said something one time about King Saul, and you may not remember you said it. I will never forget you said, it wasn't King Saul, is what you said about Samson. Samson is this guy who carries away the gates of the city and manifests all of that power. And I'll never forget. Why do we assume that Samson was like LeBron James? The miracle is even greater if he's 5'6". And that's when I made some comment, that's when you made that comment, and I thought, why am I not smart enough to figure that out? I mean, I just think that's an amazing type of thing if you begin to think about this. And so he's got his eye on him, and look in verse 16. All Israel and Judah loved David because he came out and went before him. And so Saul said to David, here's my older daughter. I'll give her to you for a wife. You've got to be valiant for me and fight the Lord's battle. For Saul thought, I know what he said, you know what he's thinking? Let my hand not be against him, but let the Philistines kill him. So now, you know, there is this older daughter, Merab, and I'll give you to her as your wife. And David said to Saul, who am I? Listen to humility. Who am I, and what is my life or my father's family in Israel that I should be the son-in-law to the king? And it happened at that time that Merab, Saul's daughter, should have been given to David, that he was given to Adriel, the Meholathite, as his wife. And so he didn't get to get this wife. And so there's the second daughter. Her name is Michal, and she loved David. So Saul says to him, I'll give him to her. He'll be a snare to him. The hand of the Philistines began against him. He said, you'll be my daughter-in-law today. And so David says, look down at verse 20-25. Saul said, thus shall you say to David, the king does not desire any dowry at all. You don't have to buy her from me, but there is a price you need to pay. You need to bring 100 foreskins of the Philistines. The foreskin is that part of in circumcision that is cut off of the male's reproductive organ. And so we go out there and cut the foreskin off of a 100 Philistines. You know what David does? He brings in 200. I want you to become Saul for just a minute. I thought they would kill him. I mean, I thought they would kill David. And yet David brings this in, and David arose and went and his men. They killed 200 men. They brought their foreskins and gave them in full court to the king that he might become the king's son-in-law. And so Michal became the wife. Then Saul saw, verse 28, and knew the Lord was with David and that his daughter loved him. Nothing's going to right in the life of King Saul. He didn't really want David to marry this second daughter of his. He wanted to use her as an avenue to get David killed. And now his second daughter is married to him. And verse 30, then the princes of the Philistines went out to war, and it was so whenever they went out that David behaved more wisely than any of the servants and more wisely than all of the servants of Saul, so that his name became mightily esteemed. Let's get to chapter 19. We're not going to finish this. And so there's this plot in chapter 19 that we begin to read about. And in verse 2, here's Jonathan again. Jonathan told David, "My father Saul seeks to kill you. Therefore, please be on your guard until the morning and stay in a secret place and hide. And I'll go out and stand beside my father in the field where you are, and I will speak to my father about you. Then what I observe, I will tell you." So Jonathan goes out. He's talking to King Saul. What does he do? It's Saul's son bragging on David. "You having a bad day, King Saul? Oh, you better believe it. Now, it's not only my children are not only the people that are singing the praises of David killing his 10,000 and those men who rejoiced when David brought in the foreskins, then he did it in the full court. I hope you saw that. And but now he says, Jonathan spoke well of David, and Saul said to him, "Let not the and said to him," this is words of Jonathan, "let not the king sin against the servant, against David, because he's not done any wrong to you." Jonathan is a great, great man. If we have time in these studies, one night I want us to just sort of focus in on Jonathan and David, but lest we don't have time to, because we only have two or three other weeks to finish this entire book. I want us to just highlight this as we go through and to see that. And so then he says, David took his life in his hands and killed the Philistines. And the Lord brought a great deliverance for all Israel. You saw it and rejoiced. Why are you sinning against the innocent blood of David? That's an amazing thing. Saul heard the voice of David, and Saul swore, "As the Lord lives, he shall not be killed." That's what he says today. You want to wait till tomorrow? You want to wait till he gets another spear in his hand, another javelin in his hand? Because it's about to come. But Jonathan called David, told him all of these things. So Jonathan brought David to King Saul, and he was in his presence as he had been in times in the past. There was war again. David went out and fought with the Philistines and struck them with a mighty blow, and they fled. Now the distressing spirit from the Lord came upon Saul. That's 19:9. And Saul, as he sat in his house with a spear in his hand, David was playing music with his hand. Saul sought to pin David to the wall with a spear, but he slipped away from Saul's presence, drove the spear into the wall, so David fled and escaped that night. It's amazing, isn't it? The attitude that King Saul has from this. And all of that is in chapter 19. And so David flees. That's the last thing found in chapter 19. Let's go to chapter 20. Chapter 20. Here's this friendship between David and Jonathan. When David had fled from King Saul's prison, he went and said to Jonathan, "What's going on? What have I done? What's my iniquity?" You ever been in that situation? Somebody really gets mad at you and you think, "I don't know what I've done." And guess what? You haven't done anything. What have we read about David that showed any evidence of showmanship or anything at all? He's just an individual that's just trying to be the servant of Saul. Jonathan said to him, no, you will not die. But that's in verse 2. By no means. My Father will do nothing, either great or small, without first telling me. And why should my Father hide this thing from me? Is it not so? It is not so. David took an oath again. Your Father certainly knows that I found favor in your eyes. And he said, do not let Jonathan know this, lest he be grieved. But truly as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, there's a step between me and death. That's amazing. I've done nothing wrong. And my life is hanging in the balance. Okay, so here's what David does. Says to Jonathan, tomorrow there'll be a feast day. And if your father misses David, then say, David earnestly sought permission to go home. He's been in the king's presence, and he sought permission to go home. If he says, it is well, then it's okay. He's not angry at me. But if he is very angry, surely this will be determined by him. Therefore, you shall deal kindly with your servant, for you've brought your servant into a covenant of the Lord with you. Nevertheless, if there's iniquity in me, kill me yourself. If I'm worthy of death, Jonathan, go ahead and kill me. For why should you bring me to your father? David says to Jonathan, who will tell me or what your father might say? He says, go out into the field, and we'll go out there tomorrow. And if the Lord shows if my father shows kindness, I'll have a way to tell you that you can come back to the house, but the Lord may ask you to leave. Jonathan calls David to vow, because he loved him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. And Jonathan said, tomorrow's the new moon, you'll be missed. On the third day, I'm going to go out and practice shooting arrows. And I want to have some arrows in my hand. You see that rock down there? You hide behind that rock. I'm going to shoot some arrows. I'm going to shoot, I believe it says three arrows. And what I say about my servant goes looking for those arrows, if I'd say, come back this way. They're on this side of the rock. Come back this way. That's the message, David, for you to come home. But if I say to you, the arrows are beyond the rocks, then you need to get ready to flee. Imagine to be David for a minute waiting to see those arrows. And I suspect you saw the arrows coming if you were a good warrior. You saw them coming in, and they didn't stop short. So after all of this, that young man is sent back to the house, and David flees. Where does he go? Well, let's get in chapter 21. In chapter 21, and that is the next slide, when David flees from Saul, he finds the high priest. His name is Ahimelech. He's the priest, at least, at the tabernacle. And he says to David, why are you alone? No one is with you. So David said to Ahimelech, the king has ordered me to do some business and said to me, do not let anyone know about the business of where I've sent you and what I've commanded you. And I have directed my young men to such and such a place. Do you have any food that I could eat? What's that say? He's hungry. Can you imagine this young boy, great warrior, great leader, but he's not been able to find food? And Ahimelech says, we don't have any ordinary bread. But there is some bread that's been on the inside that temple in the holy place. And it is holy bread. But We've brought in the new bread. We've brought in the new bread. And that holy bread is not, it didn't say it this way, but it's not quite as holy as it used to be. It's holy because it's associated with God. And the priests were to eat it, but they have not eaten it yet. And here's a hungry man. Any parallel to that in your life? Jeff, you grew up in the church. There are others who grew up in the church. I had after Sunday morning worship. There were those trays up there that had all of that leftover bread in it. Jeff, did you ever sneak up there and get any of it? I don't think Rose would have let you. I think you'd have been dead if you'd done that. I don't know, Chuck. You're a little bit younger and everything, but you know what that's like. Well, you know what Dan would do? Mr. Perfect Jerry never would do this. But there's some bread up there. Jerry's my big brother, by the way, Mr. Perfect. I've got a complex, an inferiority complex, but happiest day of my life is when I found out I don't have to be as good as Jerry to go to heaven. Jerry's got to be better than me to go to heaven, and Jerry's got to be better than Jerry to go to heaven. And when I figured out Jerry had to be better than Jerry, I thought, okay, I think I got a chance. And so Jerry didn't get the communion bread. You know what Dan did? Those guys, I guess I was 5 or 6 years of age. There's that bread. Let's go up there and eat it. Well, you know what some sisters in the church did. You know those watchdog sisters? You know who I'm talking about? And I'm an elder son, you know. I doesn't say I'm much. He's a good elder, but I may not be a good elder son. There's a real difference in those two sentences there. But here's this elder son, and as soon as the last amen is said, we all rush up to the communion table because they brought the bread back and put it on the front table. You've seen that in other places. And thank you very much, Richard. And so I got up there and I ate the bread. Well, what are elders going to do? Elders have hard decisions to make. And so the elder decided, no, we're not going to do it anymore. So I didn't do it after that. But that's not holy bread. You know, it's a grape juice. That's what it is. And it's unleavened bread. And I remember my grandmother fixing the communion. That you did it at Saturday night in the homes, and you didn't have a kitchen like we've got here, a little small kitchen back there where they put all the fruit of the vine inside those cups. You did it at home the night before. And when I was over at my grandmother's house on Saturday night, one of the worst things that had ever happened and one of the best things that ever happened was she made me take a Saturday night bath in a metal tub. You know, what do you call those? Not I'm talking about a tub. I'm just talking about a round container there. I don't know what you call those things. A wash bucket or something. You know what I want? And have your grandmother, you know, bathing you. That's not kosher. It's bad enough having your mama to do it, but not your grandmother, you know. But she was the one who filled up the communion cups. You know what she'd do? She'd fill up one little cup and just put it right out in front of me. The Lord's not going to tempt you more than you're able to bear, but sometimes grandmothers do. And then all of a sudden she said, oh, that cup's empty. I thought I'd put fruit, put juice in all of these cups. And so she'd fill that cup up again. And she's still filling up the other cups. Oh, that cup is empty. You don't know how many cups of fruit of the vine I had at Grandma's house and everything, you know. It's grape juice. That's what it is. It's fruit of the vine. But it's sacred. If you treat that fruit of the vine and that bread in an unworthy manner, what you're not doing? You're not discerning yourself. You're not discerning the body of Jesus. and you're eating and drinking damnation. It's sacred. But it's not sacred after, sacred after service. Now, I'm not encouraging any Jeff and Chuck, I'm not encouraging you this Sunday to after communion, and they take that back into the kitchen. I'm not encouraging you to rush back to the kitchen. Guess what we had to have, a problem we had here at Palm Beach Lakes? After Sunday services, kids were rushing back there to eat that communion bread. that was a thing in the past, and it may still happen every now and then and everything. Kids are kids, and we need to let them be kids and lest they be discouraged, is the Bible expression. Anyway, he didn't have a right to eat it. But the Lord and Jesus himself looks at this very incident and said, when they said, your disciples have violated the Sabbath, the holy Sabbath, because they're rubbing that grain in their hand. And he said, you need to go back and read David and Ahimelech and what David did. He ate bread that was not supposed to be for him, supposed to be for the priest. And then the Lord said, I will have mercy and not sacrifice. That's pretty good. That shows you how God longs for people to live right and do right. And the physical hunger that his disciples had was like the physical hunger that David did. And Jesus went back to this very story in the Old Testament. You know what Saul did? He tried to kill Ahimelech, and then finally. Saul kills Ahimelech. Once he found he had kept David alive, he wanted David to starve to death. That's all in 27 and 28. That's 22 and 23. I'm sorry. Let's look at 23. Yes. Let's look into. And I don't have chapter 24 here. I don't know where it went. I've got chapter 25 there. Let's look at chapter 25. The prophet Samuel dies. Isn't that amazing? The prophet Samuel dies. How long has Samuel been in David's life? As long as David has existed, almost. As far as an adult, Saul anoints him to be king. And now he's not there anymore. This is a pretty terrible time. You've got King Saul. But until you get to chapter 25, you've got the prophet Samuel. So he dies in chapter 25. And I'm glad the Bible tells us what happened. Israel gathered themselves together and lamented for him. And we don't have time to look at this in chapter 25. We'll have to start here 2 weeks from now, because there's not a stopping place right here. Let's go back and see what I left out of 24. In chapter 24, Saul takes 3,000 men in chapter 24. Look at verse 2, and goes to seek David. He comes to the sheepfold by the road. There's a cave, and Saul went in to use the bathroom. And David and his men were in the back part of the cave. Then the men of David said to him, David, this is the day the Lord has made. And He's made this day and this very event especially for you. Go kill him. David arose, cut out the corner of Saul's robe. Afterwards, after David had trembled because he'd cut the robe, and the Lord forbid that I should do anything to my master, since he has been anointed by God to be king. There's a second time, we'll look at this the next time we meet. There's a second time, and look down at the latter part of verse 24. God forbid that I should do this thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch out my hand against him, seeing he's been anointed of the Lord. But he's an evil man. Yes. But there are sometimes evil people in the church that are in some position that are due respect. Elders that do well, that rule well, should be counted worthy of, know that verse? Double honor. That's right. What if an elder doesn't do well? Paul says to Timothy, against an elder, receive not an accusation, except at the mouth of two or three witnesses. And sometimes there are individuals in the church, and thank God, as to my knowledge, it's never happened in my history of being around this congregation. Well, it sort of happened one time where there were those who sought to destroy the eldership. But folks, they have been appointed to be elders by the Holy Spirit of God. Acts chapter 20, verse 28. Over the which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers. And what an unbelievable responsibility that places on you men who are elders. And to live like the Lord's anointed. Obey them that have the rule over you, for they watch for your soul. And I've seen folks in this church, especially younger people, have an ought against an elder and attack the entire eldership because they didn't like that one elder. Thank God for the honor that this church for 44 years has given to this eldership. Do they make bad decisions? Yes, they're human. But it's not a selfish decision. Just sometimes they don't make good decisions. And we need to honor them. Why? Because they watch for our souls. That's it. That's a stopping place, and maybe I went too far, but I...